Prepare, prepare, prepare. You can't stress that enough, according to Lily Bowie. She works with the Disaster Emergency Management Response Center and is studying the resiliency of island communities like Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands as a PhD candidate at MIT.
I think the most important thing is to take the warnings seriously. I think one of the bigger mistakes that people can make is to look at the warnings that have come to us from NOAA and from the weather services and to think, oh, it's not going to happen, just because it hasn't in the past. You know, in 2015 in Hawaii, we saw a lot of hurricanes pass by and dissipate as they approached the islands and also turn and, you know, go in a completely different direction. And that complacency can be really damaging to us in terms of how prepared we can be. And so, you know, Hurricane Hector passed not too long ago without much ceremony, and then now Hurricane Lane is coming, and it looks like it's going to be the closest hurricane to come towards the island since Iniki in 1992. And we have to remember that the scale for hurricanes, the category 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, each step up is a logarithmic step, meaning like 2 is much more dramatic than 1, and 3 is much more dramatic than 2. So a lot of people will say like, okay, well, it's a cat 4 now off the shore, and as it calms, it's supposed to dissipate into a cat 2. 2 is less than 4, so maybe it's not going to be so bad. But no, it's still a hurricane, and a category 2 still can bring winds as strong as 100 miles per hour, and you know, people could still incur a lot of damage to their property.
Right. So if you live in a old wooden house built, you know, like 1950, 1930 some,
yep.
you could be in for some trouble.
Exactly. Yeah. And I see that you have the Homeowner's Handbook in front of you, which I think is a really great document to teach you, especially if you live in an older home that's not necessarily up to code. There are lots of homes on the island, like in Kailua, built in the 1960s, single wall with, you know, wooden frames, wooden roof. That's really vulnerable when it comes to even a cat 2. And so like learning how to, you know, shutter your windows and to put hurricane clips on your roof are really worthwhile things to learn for protecting your home.
And the book you made reference to is called The Homeowner's Handbook to Prepare for Natural Hazards, put out by the University of Hawaii Sea Grant College Program, put together by Dennis Wong and Darren Okimoto. Lots of really good tips about how to prepare. And even though this hurricane is basically on us, we have people's attention. And if we can survive or dodge this bullet, that people really need to get serious about what to do to prepare.
Right, absolutely. So I think that's my word to the wise, is just take this seriously. You know, go get food, go get water, go get batteries and flashlights. Make sure you have your medications that you would need. Make sure your pets have food. Make sure your cars have gas, and that you have what you would need to survive in case the power grid goes out. And I think that's the biggest thing. So in Puerto Rico, we saw Hurricane Maria directly hit the island and cross over. And it was a Cat 4 when it made landfall, Cat 2 by the time it left the west side of the island. And the entire grid went out for not just days, not just weeks, but months. And the cascading effects are that, you know, you don't have ATMs that work. You can't draw out cash. You don't have water filtration. And so you have to get your potable water from bottled water or other sources that can be filtered in some other way. Businesses are going to close, and just the normal everyday things that require power will not be available to you in the same way. So I think just thinking along those lines is really important in this case.
Right. No power means no way to charge your cell phone.
Exactly.
And lots of folks are very dependent on that for means of communication.
Absolutely. And that's the other biggest thing. So like power going out and then telecom, you know, like even if you wanted to, you might not be able to reach someone that you know on the other side of the island or the neighbor islands to say, I'm okay, or are you okay? And in some cases, you know, you might not be able to reach family on the continental mainland to tell them that you're okay, or they may not hear from you. And that kind of generates this other sense of isolation that is really unique to islands as well, because we're so far.
Right. And the whole thing, too, about cell phone communication is some folks may have given up their landline. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that the telephone poles and the telephone lines will be standing if
right.
some serious winds come through the neighborhood.
Right, absolutely. So, I mean, just from an individual preparedness, like at least know where you could get to a landline, even if you don't have a landline. Maybe it's an office nearby. Maybe it's like a, I don't know if the payphones around Hawaii are still working, but like maybe it's that, or maybe, you know, your aunt or your uncle has a landline that you could use just in case. Because if power goes out and if communication goes out, those are really the places that people will flock to. Plus ham radios. Those really worked better than satellite phones in Puerto Rico, because with satellite phones, if it's cloudy, then you won't get a good signal. With ham radios, you can communicate over shorter distances, but long enough that, you know, you might be able to broadcast and make sure that multiple people get the same message.
Is there anything else based on what Puerto Rico went through that you think we ought to be looking at?
I think there's a lot there. I think I'm most familiar with the power situation, but something that I see in Puerto Rico in parallel to something that's very relevant on Oahu in particular is that there are communities on island that are themselves isolated. So a lot of the cities are on the coast on islands because of port infrastructure. That's where trade happens. That's where people come and go. It's where people fly in. That's where the cruise ships dock. And so much activity and development is on the coastline. And so as a result, a lot more isolated communities are on the interior of the islands or in the mountains or places generally that aren't as touristy, basically. And I think one challenge is that there are places that FEMA will not reach or emergency management will not reach as quickly as Waikiki, for example. You know that Waikiki is going to be restored much more quickly because of the economic dependence on it, because we need tourists to come back and start spending money and feel like everything's okay. But then places like Haula, you know, will need to fend for themselves until the roads are cleared, until that road is opened up and emergency management can actually get there.
And we have been hearing from emergency management officials. The warning has been you've got to take care of your family because we may not be able to get to you for a couple of weeks.
Yes.
And the whole thing is increase your food supply, that kind of thing, and just be ready.
So this was actually something that I started to think about recently. And while I completely support and advocate for that preparedness culture, be ready for 14 days or a month if you can, are we really thinking about social equity when we make those claims? You know, in a sense that if you live in a 500 square foot home and you make minimum wage, can you buy 14 days worth of food, water, flashlights, and all those extra things and get gas for your car and, you know, make sure that your extended family is okay? And then let's say that you can. If you live in a 500 square foot apartment, where are you going to put it? That's the other question. And so I think that preparedness message is so important and so critical, but it also needs to be a little bit more sensitive to what is actually possible for different people of different income levels. I think that's somewhere that the field is going next. And so we know how these hazards work. Like, we know how hurricanes form, what conditions are needed for them to actually be very impactful. We can predict their trajectories. We got the hazards part down, but the social vulnerability part, I think, is what could be a little bit stronger and sharpened when it comes to research, when it comes to practice. Just, you know, like being more sensitive to the different specific situations of people who are experiencing the same disaster in very different ways.
Right. What's realistic?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What's possible?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else you think would be important to stress?
I think I'm just going to go back to my first message, which is take this seriously. Even if it doesn't happen, you'll know what it takes to be prepared. And you'll be better for it, basically, for knowing that even if this doesn't happen this time, there could be another hurricane or another storm even that's strong enough to take out the power, and I'll have my flashlights or I'll have enough food for the house. So it is worthwhile. So go do it and go get ready right now.
That was Lily Bouey, who is currently working with the National Disaster Preparedness Training Center. I misspoke and gave you the wrong name earlier. Bouey is also a doctoral student at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.